Hi, this is comedian Mary Santora, and you're listening to The Default Setting with Jess Falstick and Elizabeth Seaman. Enjoy.
Setting where we find out what makes you tick because we have ways of making you talk. I am your host, Jess Falstick.
And I'm your co-host, Elizabeth Seaman.
Today we have comedian and host of a bi-weekly showcase or open mic. He will tell us here in a moment in Erie, Pennsylvania, Mr. Dan Brady. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you guys?
Thanks so much for being here. We're doing great. You doing good, Liz?
Yeah, I got the peebs and the beebs and the r's.
Oh, the payment, the payment! Ah!
You guys are getting high. I'm keeping it legal.
Keeping it regal with the hipster, the beer of choice for all hipsters.
The one that is the second cheapest beer to buy in a 12-pack compared to the one that I wanted that they didn't have.
What's the most cheapest?
Burger beer from Cincinnati,
Ohio. That's right! Oh my god, you bought so much of that for the 4th of July thing we did at Couch Gags last year.
Hell yeah.
I was like peeing burger beer.
$5.99 for a 12-pack, and it tastes better than all the hipster beer.
And it sounds tasty, too. Burger beer, like.
Right? It's got then the U's got little umlauts on it. Like, that's
umlaut.
Just.
Umlaut. Dutch, dutch. Hey, Dan, your default setting is supportive, right?
Yes.
What makes you a supportive person?
I suffered a lot of loss in the past couple years, and it just kind of, and along with my military service and stuff, I've learned from one of my bestest friends, the best way to help yourself to improve is to help others.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I really wanted to do with stand-up.
Aw, that's awesome. So, I love that. There's so much to unpack here. You mentioned you were in the military. I believe you were
For those who don't know, he's a Marine.
Yeah.
Badass.
Yes.
Let's talk about that.
I served 8.5 years in the Marine Corps. I went to Iraq and Afghanistan. I was artillery. I shot the big guns.
I feel like that long and like artillery in the Marines has got to equal like triple the amount of time and maybe some other branches.
Yeah.
Yes. It's like.
But I would say, I'm sure you being a Marine have a lot of opinions on who that would be. I'm staying out of it.
They say the stats are basically like for every year served in a combat job in the military is 3 years on your body.
Jesus.
Wow. It's kind of like being a linebacker, except way more dangerous and fun. I mean,
you made way less money.
That's true. What the fuck, man? Our priorities are a joke. So you did for 8 years, man. That's crazy. You said 8 years, right? 8.5?
Yeah.
Wow. You really liked it then?
Yeah. The first time I got out, a lot of my friends had stayed in, and, you know, the unemployment rate was really bad, so I decided to stay in. Then towards the end of my last 4 years, I met my wife, and I decided it was time to get out and, you know, marry her.
Aw, that's great. So how long were you stationed during that whole period?
I was in Camp Pendleton, California for 8 years.
Okay, not far from where I am.
Yeah.
And did you like California?
I like Northern California. I had family up there, and I went up there on our long weekends, like Mount Shasta.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great up there.
I love the entire state of California, like, because the North is beautiful and stunning. And now I live in LA, and it definitely has its merits. The weather.
Well, Big Bear is within driving distance.
Exactly.
Of you guys.
Yep. So if I wanted to go to the snow or the mountains, I could in 1.5 hours. Or if I wanted to go to the beach, I walk 10 minutes that way and
straight uphill.
Straight uphill both ways.
The Redwood Forest is pretty amazing with the Kern River. Yeah.
So the entire time you were stationed as a Marine here in California, and then when were you deployed? Like, when? I am sorry that I know very little about the military, so please forgive my ignorance, but like, how does it work with deployment and all that?
I was deployed. I deployed to Iraq in January of 2008, and then I deployed to Afghanistan July of 2009.
So were you in Iraq and then went directly from Iraq to Afghanistan?
No, I was back in the States for about 6 months, okay. 7 months.
Very cool.
I was young and dumb, and they're like, who wants to go back? And I was like, yeah, sure, why not? Nobody loves it. So.
I think you were in Iraq like the same time my brother was about. But he was in the Army, so.
Okay.
It's different. Don't judge him.
And then my final deployment, I was actually on ship with the Navy. Like, we travel around and we get off in little countries and stuff like that. Like, we went to Singapore, Hong Kong, Oman.
Oh, wow.
Hawaii, really. Went to Djibouti.
Djibouti?
I went to Djibouti.
That You're place so is not the greatest.
Is it? It's on the Horn of Africa, isn't it?
Yeah, it's basically... It's right across from Syria.
Okay.
It's like the bridge of the nose.
Gotcha. How long were you, like, how long were you stopping in each one of these places?
Well, like, we stopped in Hong Kong for like 3 days. They let us get off ship and explore.
Everyone was allowed to go catch STDs wherever they were allowed.
How many whores were there on this whole trip?
His wife is in the house. Play cool.
Me and my buddy, we walked into the shady part of Hong Kong, and we saw a hooker come out of the back alley with a fat guy, and she had to pull a wedgie out.
Nice.
That was pretty fun.
That's good times.
First time I saw prostitutes that I knew were prostitutes was in Germany.
Ooh.
My friend told me, like, oh, those are hookers. And I'm like, no, no shit.
You want to know how observant I am? The first time I knew I was looking at an actual hooker was in the red light district of Amsterdam. That's the only time I was
literally up in light saying this is a hooker.
Ever been sure that I was looking at a hooker, so there's that. So what part of your deployment, like, you had mentioned that, like, being in Iraq and Afghanistan sort of led to that sort of supportive vibe. What would you say was the part of that?
Yeah, well, I didn't experience it as bad as some people, but through, like, friends that I've met over the years, I've met a lot of veterans that struggle, you know, and I didn't have a great house life growing up, so a lot of my stuff comes from, you know, having a bad childhood, not necessarily bad, but not a mentally great one, and then, you know, I just kind of felt for a lot of people, and, you know, a lot of people lose their way, and I feel like I did, but I found it, so I just want to, I want to try to help anybody I can.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Good guy Dan.
Good guy Dan is a good guy. He is actually a good guy. If there's anybody who's fucking rolling their eyes at the sincerity of this right now, I swear to God, I will come to your house. Actually,
Jess will cut you.
I'll just send Dan, because Dan's a fucking Marine.
My ass over there.
Dan's a fucking Marine. He'll come to your house and kill you. And the government will let him, because he served proudly for our country. That's how it works. Oh, we lost Dan.
Okay.
Dan's gone. So we were talking about, though,
so see, support.
Yeah.
Hi, Jess. This is what happens. Supportive, like, can you think of a specific incident or instance or, you know, event where you were like, oh, fuck, like, I really enjoy supporting people. Like, when, what was the turning point of that?
Okay, I'm about to bring it down a little bit.
Hi, Jobs, man. It's okay.
March 23rd, 2017, my closest friend, my corpsman or my medic from my Afghanistan deployment, committed suicide.
Jesus.
And that fucking hurt. And just kind of like from that hurt, it's, on the average, every person that commits suicide, there are 6 people that are deeply affected. And then the rate for them goes through the roof for suicide.
Really?
So, like, my concern necessarily isn't on the person that commits suicide, but I wanna stop those people around it from hurting.
Right.
Yeah. You don't want, like, a chain reaction.
Yeah.
Like dominoes or something.
Experienced that with some of the guys I had served with. I wasn't very close, but, you know, the suicide rate amongst veterans has gone up exponentially over the past couple of years.
Right.
So,
yeah, it's very serious. And a lot of times, I mean, what the people talk about, like, because I don't know if the culture is changing. We could give some insight into it, like whether it's more acceptable, like getting help now, because what people like say, or what I've heard, is that you kind of just be like stiff upper lip, deal with it. Like if you get help, then you're a wuss.
Yeah.
So are people?
I think the culture is changing in that.
That's
like,
good to hear.
I go twice a month to the VA. I don't know why I'm pointing to where the VA is. You guys don't.
Well, now we do.
To VA mental health therapy. And I go there, and it's packed every time I go there. So veterans, new and old, I see a lot of Vietnam guys going to support groups and stuff. So, like,
because
the suicide rate's really high amongst their generation because they were taught never to talk about it.
Yeah.
So, you know, you see more and more of them going to meetings and stuff, and it's turning around. But we need people that are more vocal about it, like March 23rd, on my friend's anniversary, I'm doing a comedy benefit for the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention.
Wow.
So in that, I've been talking to them, and I became a volunteer, and then I became a part of their public policy team, which means if there's any issues, state or federal, over mental illness or, you know, something related to that, they'll bring me to speak.
That's awesome.
That's so great.
So, man, you get to, like, be supportive and, like, represent it in so many different ways.
Yeah.
Right.
Way to get involved. And
I try to be active with the veteran community. Like, some of my greatest friends here in Erie are veterans that I didn't serve with, just guys that I've met. So, one of my best friends, probably the guy I look up to, he runs every year a veteran duck hunt on Presque Isle here.
And that's
gets
cool.
20 veterans involved. And like this year, everybody got a free box of decoys. I helped raise money for them. It was a really great time.
That sounds like something my brother would be really into. So it's one of the reasons he's like out in Oklahoma. He just likes the hunting and fishing and everything out there, like way more. He's on.
Yeah.
He's at a college now. In good for him because he's got 3 kids and he's a single dad and he's going to school and he's a vet and he's like juggling it all. And he's in Oklahoma. Colleges have fishing teams, guys.
Wow.
He's on a bass fishing team. Oh, fuck.
Your brother's a vet?
Yeah. And that's what you're saying. The duck hunting thing. I'm like, man, that sounds like something he'd be really into. Because he's all...
Well, there's actually an organization. There's an organization called the Fallen Outdoors. And they work heavily in the Midwest. It's actually a Facebook group called the Midwest Fallen Outdoors page. And they give away hunts all the time for, like, Oklahoma, Texas, and stuff like that for veterans.
That's really cool.
I am writing it down.
I'll send you the page once we get out of here.
Yes, please. That would be awesome. He's never going to listen to this. Stop talking about me.
They're discovering there's a lot of healing through veteran hunting outdoor groups. Not just, you know, a bunch of guys get to go kill something, but it's just camaraderie because you get to talk to other veterans, and then sometimes it's really hard to talk to civilians, so you get to work with them and stuff. So it's really a great experience. And then you know, hopefully you get memories that will last a lifetime. So
yeah, and I gotta imagine like the being able to like go outdoors and just be in nature where it's quieter and it's calmer and, you know,
though to that
flashing lights and everything everywhere.
To that point, something that immediately entered my head was the idea of going hunting when you're afflicted with PTSD. I mean, there's guns, right? Like there's gunfire. How does that affect a lot of people?
It's kind of like you get zoned in. I found most like veterans that kind of have those kind of things, they get zoned in and it's just, they know what they need to do and it happens. It's kind of like everything else goes away and, you know, you only have one choice and that's to make the situation happen.
And I heard that like when you're hunting at something, like when you're a vet and it's like when it's like an expected situation, it's different other than like you're in your car and you hear a car next to you backfire and then yeah, that like snaps you into it as a, like when you're not expecting to hear it. That probably can't help.
I've had like my biggest issue was fireworks.
I was going to say fireworks.
This past year were pretty bad, but like a lot of times, unexpected noises, it's like, okay, I've been in the States long enough to know that I'm here. But, you know, there are some guys that, like, can't leave their house, you know, stuff like that. There are some very severe cases.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I'm lucky.
My grandpa was in Korea. And oh, no, gone, sorry.
Oh,
he was in Korea, and my grandma tells a story about how, so they lived on the path of the airport, and one time a plane went particularly low, woke him up, so he grabbed her and just rolled off the bed, and he was on top of her, like, next to the bed. She's like, Jesus Christ.
I mean,
he's trying to, like, keep her down. I'm like, well, you know, that's nice. He was being
that's what I was going to say. I was like, that's actually really nice, because, like, what I thought you were going to say is my grandfather was in the 101st Airborne in World War II. And he had such bad PTSD that, like, he just beat everybody. Like, he beat my grandmother and my dad. And, like, so that's where I thought that was going is, like, at least his instinct was to protect her and not, you know, because that's a big part of it. That's such a big part of it.
Yeah. Well, and the earlier wars, like World War I, World War II, and Korea, PTSD was, like, shell shock at the time. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't that big of an issue because, well, it's still a big issue, but most of the guys, it would take them 2-3 months to come back.
Yeah.
But like,
oh, yeah, like the gravel and everything.
Oh,
yeah,
you weren't there like God, the next day.
So Vietnam, like you were having guys that would be in the brush getting shot at and then within 48 hours being home.
That's got to be
so
true.
That's why like you started having incidences like, you know, the term going postal comes from Vietnam workers snapping in the post office. So, like, and then luckily once Iraq and Afghanistan started, a lot of the therapy and treatments for it have really increased. I mean, I know, like, our VA here, they started using holistic stuff to help treat veteran systems. So they got groups. I mean, it's definitely a lot better than it used to be.
Yeah, for sure.
So, like, have you learned, and I apologize, you mentioned, you've been through some therapy. Have you done therapy?
Yes. Yeah, I've done therapy pretty steady since I got out in 2015.
And you find it, of course, helpful, cathartic, I mean, is...
Yeah.
Okay. That's good. I mean, have you learned?
I think it worked.
Good. Have you learned, like you know, techniques for supporting others through that, or was that always sort of just an instinct that you kind of had?
I kind of grown up at it. I had a sister with a lot of mental illness, so I kind of like connect with people like that.
Yeah.
So, and plus, I deal with a lot of downswings myself, so I just kind of understand.
For sure. And I mean, what would you say some of your techniques are for helping people or supporting people in that regard?
If I have the person's number and I know they're not doing good, I'll call them and I'll talk to them. about anything, really, you know. You know, I always offer to go over there, hang out with them. I try to talk to them as much as possible. Just keep them talking, really, because I believe, have you ever experienced, like, a manic episode?
I don't think so.
I have a bit.
So, I think in that moment is where, like, suicide comes from, because it's not a rational thought. And then, so if you can keep somebody from going into that manic space, just keep them calm down, you know, remind them to breathe and talking to them, just, you know,
it just, you help give them like a tether to reality.
Yeah.
That, I think that helps.
Would you say medication is also a big part of a lot of that?
Yeah. Because I take Paxil myself. So I think one day I kind of hope to get off of it.
Okay.
But because I know guys who have done it pretty successfully, but it helps, I think, for a time being until you you get enough strength in your life, I think. I think they're a good crutch to have.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a very... We're talking a little bit earlier about stigmatizing, you know, this sort of thing and how the stigmas are sort of going away, which is good. But by the same token, you know, I think... I don't know if it's a subcategory of this or like the same category, but essentially the stigma around medication. And, you know, again, it's just, a little bit in part because, you know, no one wants anyone to think that they're, you know, depressed or, you know, bipolar or whatever the case might be. So I think that's part of it. But I also think there's a stigma of like people, there are definitely a branch of people I would say that don't stigmatize mental illness as bad, but they stigmatize medication. Like, it's almost as if either like medication represents weakness and the inability to sort of fix yourself, or obviously there's this whole school of thought about like everything being natural and holistic and organic and, you know, that kind of thing. And so, you know, I don't know if you've encountered that at all with people who either are against medication because they feel it represents a personal weakness, or they are against medication because they think big pharma and, you know, all that stuff.
I've definitely met people like that, but I mean, I do believe that too much medication can be a bad thing.
Sure.
Like if they just throw Valium and like if you don't actually try to work on yourself under the medication, then.
Yeah. Like if you can't on that, like I said, by itself, you're right.
My hope one day is to be off antidepressants and stuff like that.
How long have you been on them?
2 years. Hon? Yeah, 2 years. Wife confirmed.
Aren't those great? Wives and husbands and people who live with you are so great. Like, my boyfriend and I all the time are always just like, babe, when was that thing? And then he'll yell it, and I'll be like, yep, that's right.
I need a walking record keeper.
Yeah, you gotta get you one. Just get a parrot. Just get a parrot.
Like looking around, I'm like, I've had that candle for a while.
Hello, candle.
Talk much.
I don't know if he'd have a very good memory.
I named my couch, but
did you name your couch?
Oh yeah, I named my couch when I got it.
What's your couch's name?
Sunny.
Bunny?
She's Sunny.
Oh, sorry.
She's yellow.
Yeah. I didn't know.
My shower curtain's name is Julius. He's my gay son. And my Christmas tree is always named Frasier. He's my son who visits for the holidays from Seattle.
Do you just like do you have like tossed salad and scrambled egg ornaments you put on it?
No. Oh, but my best friend's aunt got me a little microphone this year, a little microphone ornament for stand-up comedy.
That's cute. All right, so that's a good segue. Were you doing comedy when you were still in the Marines, or was that something that came later?
No, your first toast prattle is the first time I actually got behind a mic.
Oh my god!
You and your wife came too.
Oh my god!
Yes.
Yeah, because she's so sweet.
She is a sweetheart.
Yes, she is. I am very lucky to have her.
We love Dan.
Do you hear that?
I unplugged my headphones.
I heard her, yes.
And I can't hear anything.
Oh, God. Hold on. We're having
I did it.
Yay, we did it.
I unplugged my
headphones. Yay. Yeah, no, I now that you're, oh, my God, that's so great. So,
yeah, because I was at Bar Louie, right?
Yeah, yeah. And yeah.
And then you guys came to the one that we did on Jess's rooftop.
Yeah! Right. Oh, my God, that was so fun.
That was so much fun.
That was the most fun. Wait, did you toast Angelo? Was that who you toasted?
Yeah.
Ah, Angelo Manage! Yeah. Yes, we had him as a guest. He is also fantastic. Yeah, that was a really fun time. And what you and I may have talked about this before, but as mentioned, marijuana. What made you want to get into the like actually pursue it?
I had been thinking about it for a while, especially after my friend had committed suicide. Because I've always grown up watching stand up. Like kids were watching Cat Dog and stuff. I was watching Comedy Central Presents.
Yeah.
Oh man, you had taste.
Oh. Yeah. I grew up watching those and every other comedy special that they did. And so after Adrian passed, I was like, oh, I should maybe think about doing this. And I started I joined the Cleveland group, a Pittsburgh group. I started talking to a guy in Pittsburgh, and then oddly enough, March 7th, my mother-in-law passed away, and that day, Junior's Last Laugh, the comedy club here in Erie, posted a sign-up sheet for their next open mic, so I did it.
Yay!
And that was April 11th of this 2018, yeah, so I'm coming up on a year here.
You're still a baby!
Jess thinks everyone's a baby.
Well, technically, compared to me, everyone is a baby, so...
See, she's just full of it.
Well, I just got done my acting class, and you do this thing called... Ooh. You do this thing called a slate, so you introduce yourself to the camera and who you're reading for, and then sometimes the casting director will ask you, like, questions about yourself just to get a feel for your personality, and I was like, oh, I'm 37. Yeah. He's like, 37 going on 20, and I was like, no. Thank you, yes.
Finally, maybe one day someone will convince you you're not the old woman who lives in the
shoe. Well, age, chronologically, I am, you know, aesthetically fine, but, you know, just, you know, 37 is, like, close to a decade older than most of my friends. How old are you, Dan?
I'm 30.
See, you're a baby, too. We little babies. Wow. I want a babies.
I'll be 31 in May.
We little babies. Hey, you'll be 30 in May, won't you, Liz? March 1st. Shit, sorry. I got you and Hannah confused for a second. I got it.
Oh!
I know.
Hannah and I hung out the last week.
I know you guys were yelling about... Dan, what shows do you watch on TV? Do you watch You're the Worst?
Oh, yeah. That's what we're
Marvelous Miss Maisel is the show I like right now.
Okay, comedy. Yeah, I like it.
I think it's well done. It has a great story to it. It's plus the way they depict like Lenny Bruce and everything he did for comedy.
Yeah.
I love the costumes too.
Me too. But yeah, Eliz and I got really excited last weekend because we watched a show called You're the Worst, and one of the lead actors messaged me on Instagram, and I was like, we were all screaming, and so that's where.
It was
Oh
my God.
Yeah, it was pretty fantastic.
That's awesome. I'm
jealous.
Well, what's even funnier is she has a mole on her lip, and this guy that I'm not even friends with, he's like my ex-husband's friend, like commented like, make sure you don't get her herp lip, and she like writes back, she's like, oh, actually it's a mole, but thanks. And I was like, yes, she just owed this douchebag and my feed.
Cash just burned your dumb ass.
You burnt!
You burnt! I love saying that.
I know. You got me saying it now.
Like, it's contagious.
You
it's
burnt.
So much fun. I love to say it about myself, too. I just go, Elizabeth, you burnt. I swear, it's in a TV show or something, and it just cracks me up.
No, I think
I have to say it all the time.
I definitely heard it on a show, and then you said it, and now it's in my head. I was like, oh, that is a fantastic phrase. You burnt.
Right. I say it to my grandma a bunch.
So, your grandma, you burn!
I do it when she burns other people, too.
See, that's why we did...
I'm her hype man.
That's why we did the toast prattle, because we're all very nice people who don't like to burn people. like you do in a roast.
I just like to promote it when other people do burning.
Did that stop?
It had to because no one wanted to do it.
Nobody was signing up. Nobody wanted to be nice.
Well, and
that's a shame.
What's that?
I said, that's a shame. I really love that idea.
Thank you. It was not my idea. Okay, here's a fun story that I don't think I've ever actually told on here. What happened was someone had told me about this comic in Cleveland or Chicago named Kyle Ayers. And they were like, hey, he's doing reverse roast battles. And I was like, oh my God. Like, it's like they're being nice to each other. And so he had posted a video on YouTube. I'd found it. I loved it. I followed him on Twitter and I was like, hey man, I'm thinking about bringing this idea to Cleveland. It's amazing. What do you think? And he was like, yeah, that'd be great. I'd love to come see Bill Squire too. And I was like, okay, well, if you want to come do it, that's cool. Like, I never responded, but I was like thinking, I can't afford this guy. Like, you know, he's got a blue check mark. I can't afford this guy.
He's got a blue check
mark. I mean, to the degree that he's going to expect money, like, and I don't have money to pay him. So I was like, you know, cool. Well, then I started posting about, like, how I'm going to do these reverse roast battles, and I tagged him, and I'm like, this is genius Kyle Ayers' idea. I'm just stealing it. Like, I just love it. I get a fucking cease and desist email from his attorney here in LA saying, you're going around on the internet saying, bragging about how you stole my client's ideas and all this crap. And I was like, I was actually giving him credit, but okay.
Hi,
Smeef's visiting. Smeef's coming in. This is a new thing. Smeef interrupts podcasting to freak the fuck out. Hi. Yeah, it's all right. It's okay. So we had to rebrand it because we originally branded it using his term boast rattle. And so because he C&D'd us and I worked for a law firm, they were like, yeah, all you got to do is just call it something else. And I was like, okay, cool. Because then the other thing was they were like, you're trying to profit off my client's idea. And on every flyer, it said free admission. And I was like, does profit not mean what I think it means? Like, it's a different word than I was aware of.
That's a cuddly cat.
She does this. This is like a new thing she started doing. I don't.
She did it on one other podcast where she was just freaking out and she was like up in Jess's ear. She just kept trying to like crawl on her like, oh my God, look at me.
And I had to hold her like a baby. And like what was really funny was our guest is, his name's Yubad Jolowolo. I don't know if you've met him before. He's from Nigeria.
No, I haven't.
So he's from Nigeria, and like I'm just like, here's my baby kitty. And he was just like, you people, you white people, I don't understand you and your pets and your bullshit. But yeah, we were talking about your toast prattle premiere was amazing. And then you decided that sort of led to the open mic. How did it take off from there? I mean, my personal opinion is I am strongly encouraging of you because I think you have natural talent, but what made you want to keep going?
Guys, one of the host of the open mic, he's like, was that your first time? I was like, yeah. He's like, well, don't stop. So, nice. And then I've started hearing from other people that I did really good. Like, I got a reaction from a comic a couple weeks ago. He's like, how long you been doing this? So I was like, about 9 months. He's like, get the fuck out of here. So that keeps me going. Plus, it's a great date night for me and my wife. Yeah. She comes with me to a lot of this stuff.
She's awesome, by the way, because most wives bail after month one. Most wives are like, okay, this is
I'm never going to your shows.
Yeah.
Well, that's so cool. I don't know. I think she's awfully proud of me, and she loves me for some reason. So,
you have a healthy marriage. You're like, well, I just think it's because I have a healthy marriage, and you know,
we just love each other.
Yeah,
and we support each other.
Yeah, it's weird, right? Like, you don't hear about those.
Well, hunting and stuff like that. Like, I would be gone all the time, and eventually, I was like, you know what? Why don't I get you into this and show you what I'm seeing? So now, like, I'll take her out hunting, but then she also lets me go out by myself because she understands.
That's cool.
So, like, she knows how much the stand-up means to me, and, you know, I think she thinks I have something special, so.
How do you, aside from...
You are a supportive person, and you found a supportive person. I'm glad it's not, you know, sometimes, a lot of times relationships end up, like, with a one-sided giver and a taker, and then people get exhausted, but, like, two givers...
Aww. That's great shit, man. Oh.
It's so sweet.
We lost you.
Oh. Okay. Who's back? I don't know why I keep doing that.
No, it's okay. I just want to make sure you're there so we're not like, blah, blah, blah. And then 15 minutes later when I finally stop talking, you're just not there.
And then
well, it kicked me out and kicked me way back in.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, you were mentioning how you found this sort of need to be filled with helping veterans with PTSD. And then it also sounds like you're sort of segueing your newfound talents of comedy into using that to help them. And I couldn't recall, you'd said you had a couple events coming up. I couldn't recall if they're going to be regular events or what do you have going on?
Well, the big one, March 23rd at Basement Transmissions here in Erie, doing a comedy benefit for the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. We're also, we're doing raffles. We got a lot of local artists involved and then some local vendors because, you know, the first step to helping the community is to start at the community.
Yeah.
So me and my friend Will Ayers, we've been, you just met him on Monday, Elizabeth.
Oh, yeah, yeah, you brought him to Around the Corner.
Yeah, he helps me with a lot of stuff. Yeah, he is.
Awesome.
He just suffered a really bad loss, too. So we're actually doing a show this coming Saturday for Will because his father just recently passed.
Oh.
So all the money from that is going to go to his family. Katie Moynihan's on that. Brian Sternick.
All good people.
Katie is very good for as young as she is. She is pretty good.
She's so new and she's so good. We should have her on.
Okay. Yeah, let's do it. I'm totally. Always.
I strongly agree with that. She's very funny.
Man, you just can't stop supporting people. You support everybody.
Jeez, Dan, can't you just...
What a good person.
Reel it in.
What's the point of not being respectful to people going after the same dream?
This is the most heartfelt, earnest episode of the default setting. It's going to be labeled a very special default setting. And then...
And if you listen to my comedy, you would not guess this at all.
No, and that's...
I love that. So like, okay, so when I remember, Dan, when we first... One of the first times we met, you were doing... you came to one of the shows and I had made a joke about how we were on the same show because I love broken family jokes like so much. Like, oh, I think it's just because they're dark and I really like dark humor and just like have a broken, like coming from a broken family. It's just so, I don't know. It's so funny to me. And then you're like, oh, you like broken family jokes. I'm like, wait till you see this. And every time he comes up with new ones, he like lets me know before he goes up, and he's like, "You wait for it. You wait for it. It's gonna. This is dark.
This is for you." Well, because I had you on as one of my funny stop competitors at an amateur night a while back, and I just remember you were asking me about what the restrictions were, and I was like, "No swearing," and you're like, "What about abortion?" I'm like, "Nah, I think that's fair game," or like something like that. And then I was like,
"Who knows what's actually off limits there?"
And then I was like, "Oh, holy shit!" Like that was the first thing. Like I was like, "I just love that." Like, "Hey, can I talk about abortion?" Yeah, it's fine. Yeah, just don't say fuck or pussy, apparently, and you know that's totally fine.
Lead with abortion. It'll be fine.
Yeah, it's totally fine. That's it. That's the one thing that also blew me away was not only how good you were off the bat, but how dark your shit can be because you don't expect it talking to you at all. You're like the nicest guy.
I mean, and I think that's why because I've just kind of learned to turn all the dark bullshit into something funny. Like, I believe if, like, things like suicide, we keep talking about it like it's this dark, horrible thing. And yeah, it is, but it makes it harder for people to say, like, you know, I attempted suicide once if everybody has this whole hush-hush feeling around it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's, I don't know what your thoughts are on this. I know Liz and I have talked about this a lot, and one of the reasons she's one of my best friends is because I think we're pretty much on the same page of, like, there needs to be more balance now between, like, you know, checking people and making sure they're not being offensive, but also not going to an extreme where we just start saying we can't make jokes about things or we can't talk about things.
Right.
And I don't know if you've experienced, like, yet in your young comedy career, any pushback for you in the topics that you bring up, or has everyone been mostly pretty supportive so far?
Yeah, I'm not going to mention the person's name.
Yes, what?
The new pedophile beginning I have to my dad joke, it ruffled some feathers. So I'm not going to mention any names, but they don't like me.
There's comedians that you ruffled the feathers of?
Yes.
Oh, I probably can guess. Let's talk about that offline. Because here's the thing, though. Like, there aren't a lot of comedians. This is what Jess is going to say about this, and then we're going to move on. There aren't a lot of comedians that get offended, like good comedians anyway, because they're smart and they can assess when things are actually a personal attack and when it's just a joke.
Yeah. But anyway.
I'm not saying that. Okay, let's just make this very clear right now. Women are hilarious and women think other women are hilarious. There are certain types of women. There are certain types of women that like to insert themselves into situations disguised as comedians, but are really social justice warriors here to destroy humor as we know it.
You might actually know this person.
I told you. Because that's the thing. When you talk about how like somebody, a comedian got offended, it's like, okay. Like, I think about everybody I know in the Cleveland comedy scene and the kind of shit they say and the kind of shit that, you know, they get away with. And I can only think of one person. So, because really no one gets offended in the Cleveland comedy community unless you're just fucking a racist piece of shit.
Oh,
which brings sorry. Us. Yeah, this please tell the story was... and then I want you to tell the story you told me to Liz after this. Okay, go ahead.
This wasn't Pittsburgh, the person. But anyway, the story about racism.
Yes, please. Ooh. Okay, so the thing I was saying is that the only time you'll piss people off in Cleveland, this is the segue, is that you're openly just a racist piece of shit and not funny to boot. Okay, go.
Racist and sexist piece
of shit. Yeah, racist, sexist piece of shit and not funny to boot. Okay,
sometimes go. Like, I'm kidding. Why aren't you laughing? Yeah. It's like, because you're obviously not joking.
And also you're not funny. Like,
yeah, it's not funny.
A racial joke is funny, but a racist
exactly.
joke is not.
Good call.
All right, go.
Oh, God.
So, I was running this open mic at a bar, and we had this comedian. He got on stage, and when he gets on stage, everybody else goes outside because he's a hack. And so, apparently, he started getting heckled by a black man. And he does what every normal white person does and says the N-word.
As we all and do, then, as white people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then he uploaded the video to Facebook, tagged the venue in it, and said, ha ha, I say the N-word.
Which,
and has he gotten fucking curb stomped yet, or like... Does anyone beat this man up?
Basically, everybody in the Erie scene has cut ties with this person.
Yeah, that's about the time to do that.
Seems like the time. Yeah.
Christ.
God. Especially when you've been doing comedy since 2001 and don't have a special or even, you know, a featured spot at a comedy club on your resume.
You could be the most successful fucking person on the planet, but the second that Jerry Seinfeld drops an N-bomb, right. It's over. Like, it's just over. You can't pull that shit.
So, like, with that Kramer guy.
That's what he said. He said he Michael Richards did. He used it as a verb. Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, that really sucks. I was telling him that's kind of, though, how, like, couch gags got started, except kind of the opposite. I was like, you guys had your bar cancel on you because they were respectful, decent human beings. Our bar canceled on us because we were trying to be respectful, decent human beings, and that didn't fit with their culture. So,
and then they started throwing stuff.
Yeah. So, you said the person that was offended was actually a Pittsburgh comedian?
Yes.
No shit. All right.
See, Jess.
All right. Well, I retract.
Yeah.
Wait.
No, you were right in the description.
Okay. Well, I retract who I thought it was because I thought it was a Cleveland comedian. But I still stand by my opinions of that individual. And I apparently am the only one who does. I don't understand it, but we're not going to go down that rabbit hole.
I got you.
But, yeah. So, let's see. We're talking about being supportive to, like, friends and, you know, all that kind of shit. Like, yeah, man, you're just fucking killing it. You're just... fucking killing.
Thank you.
You are
running shows, hosting benefits.
Yeah.
Damn, son.
Yeah.
Get some.
Do you have a regular show? You mentioned the shows you were doing for, like, there were benefits.
I run a biweekly open mic, which if you're a Cleveland comic and you want to come to Erie, Either find me Daniel Brady on Facebook or at FooBar Comedy. I'll put you up.
Yeah.
FooBar Comedy.
What is it? What is it called?
Fucked up beyond all recognition.
Oh, FooBar. That's what I thought you had said, but I wasn't sure if it was FooBar or PooBar. I was like, I want to make sure I got that right. Because I'll be promoting
it. FooBar Comedy.
FooBar.
Yeah, FooBar Comedy.
You should stick your head in a honey pot and yell jokes into it on
just
stage.
A little black rain cloud.
A little black rain cloud. That's a lot of comedians.
And then March 2nd, I have a show coming up at the Erie Movie House.
Okay.
Comics coming in from New York. And then I have Nate Nolf coming in from Pittsburgh. He's very funny.
Look at you!
Damn.
You just fucking got it going. So it sounds like you kind of have regular stuff all about Erie, right? There's not like a weekly showcase or anything like that.
Just the bi-weekly
one. There's unfortunately there's not a tremendous scene here yet.
But you'll get it started.
There's like six or seven regulars that come every week. We have some really talented individuals here.
Yeah.
But so we're going to run it bi-weekly until we get more of a scene. But we have people show up to the open mics. We have people show up to our shows. Usually it's three. Sometimes it's three people. Sometimes it's,
been there.
30.
Yes.
Been there. And Dan, you're always so gracious because you come all the way out here to do like our couch gags and stuff. It's like, man.
Yeah, we've never schlepped it up to Erie for any of your shit. We're
no, we're douches.
Yeah.
Honestly, I love coming to Cleveland because you guys have such a great and open scene. Like, you guys, like, I'll walk into an open mic and three people will be like, "Yo, what's up, man?" I love coming there for comedy, and so does my wife.
There's definitely a sense of camaraderie, which I love about the Cleveland comedy scene. I mean, it can get, backstabby and dramatic just like anything else, but...
I swear, it can be more dramatic than my all-girls stabbing high school.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm serious. My all-girls get, like, we were nerds, and we didn't have that much drama. Except when there was drama, for some reason, people always thought I was, like, the meanest person.
Aww.
I'm like, bitch, I didn't do anything. But they just assumed I was the mastermind. And I mean, it worked out for me. I didn't have to do anything, and I get the reputation for being the baddest bee.
Regina Seaman up in here.
Right? It was sweet. I'm like, fine. Everyone think I'm the Maleficent, and I'm okay with it. Anyway, yeah, I love the Cleveland comedy scene. It's so much fun. I made so many friends. I'm like, who makes this many friends in one, like, as an adult anymore? People don't do that. People make apps to make friends, and all of a sudden, like, in a year, I friended, like, 50 people who I, like, legitimately see, like, almost once a week.
Truth.
It's great.
Oh, I mean, I've met guys like John Armstrong, who's just been nice to me outright.
And he's solid talent.
John Armstrong.
Me too.
He's so funny.
And Sternick, Amber, like, they're good friends. And,
right?
I haven't really known them that long. Just good people.
Yep.
I agree.
Yep, I agree. All quality people. How far of a drive is it from Erie to Cleveland and back?
To Lakewood, it's an hour and 40 minutes.
Mm. Not too bad.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, I say not too bad, but I bitch when I'm like, oh, God. What, like,
half an hour, right? Yeah, exactly.
I drive an hour, and I'm like, crumble. So, good for you.
Oh, thank you. Plus, no one can see how hard I work if I don't try,
True.
Like, I mean, I've known I've gotten some shows just basically because I show up. So.
Which, as someone who hosts some book shows with, Jess and I, we appreciate that immensely.
Indeed.
Like, when somebody from Erie is more dependable and gives you more of a heads up if they're not going to be there because there was a crazy-ass snowstorm, which is, like, the only reason you've ever canceled. Because, good on you.
Well, I messaged you, 2 days before that? But, hey.
You're like, this might be rough. And I'm like, oh, okay, noted. Thanks. And then all of a sudden, when you sent me a picture of your driveway, like of your car, like covered in snow. And you're like, I don't think it's going to be a thing. And I'm like, thanks for letting me know. And then we ended up canceling the show anyway because it was bad here too. So.
Yeah.
So the snow thing. I mean, are you still making the trip when you can this time of year, or?
Yeah, though I did Marla and John Hensler's show a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. Oh yeah, the Great American Showcase.
Yeah, that's a great venue, Lou's Tavern.
It's cool. They like only open for the show and like the Feast of the Assumption in Little Italy. It's just, and they make so much money on the Feast of the Assumption, they can pay all their bills all year.
Holy shit.
For being open like one day a year because there's that many people who go. And the people who own it, so nice.
Yeah.
They're really nice.
But I didn't look at the weather, and we got caught in a snowstorm on the way back. So that's the last time I'll ever drive anywhere and not look at the weather beforehand.
Yeah, that can be.
Do you have somewhere to crash in Cleveland, if not literally but figuratively, if like the weather gets shitty?
If you need somewhere to crash in Cleveland when the weather gets bad, I have a queen size air mattress that can be for both you and your wife.
Awesome.
You can both
Thank
spin
you.
On it. Don't die in a car crash, please.
Just no.
Sleep on my air mattress. Just do that.
I couldn't imagine that. Like, as a host, I couldn't imagine, like, your headliner dying in a car crash on the way home. Like, well, that's my fault.
Would feel real bad.
Well, now I know I'm not booking any more out-of-towners, so
I have 100 blankets.
If you're pissed off right now that I canceled your headlining gig, then you can blame Dan Brady for putting the idea in my head that you're going to die, and it's going to be all my fault, so that I have to live with that on my conscience.
I will entice you and your wife to come here with a cheese tray,
a bottle of wine. Tray?
Yeah, some charcuterie.
I'm stuck in the car. She's got cheese.
I've got more than one kind of cracker on me at almost all times.
She makes a really good Japanese curry.
Do you have summer sausage?
I could get that. I usually go with like thinly sliced cured meat, so it's like above summer sausage, like salami my ass. I want to check Italian names.
Dan's like, this is too fancy.
Soft cheeses,
I don't know.
Hard cheeses. You want some deviled eggs? I'll do that.
I make smoked deviled eggs.
I love deviled eggs.
Oh, snap. I think we just need to have a cocktail party, Dan. Just bring it.
Do it.
Just
do it anyway. Like, you don't even need to.
Let's just have a cocktail party.
It doesn't need to be shitty weather. Just do it.
Yeah.
I mean, it probably will be, but still.
July snow.
Well, do you ever get down to Pittsburgh at all, or is it pretty much just Cleveland?
When I first started, I was going to Pittsburgh a lot, but
how far is it from Erie to Pittsburgh?
It's like a 2 hour and 20 minute drive.
It's farther.
Ooh. Yeah, plus there's a lot more switching highways and the bridges.
Oh,
I mean,
God,
I like a lot of people down there, but it's closer to go to Buffalo or here or Cleveland.
Oh. How is Buffalo seen?
Very close. They are a very tight-knit bunch of people.
I had a couple of friends. Funny. They just bought a house up there, and I haven't gone and visited them yet. But I'm like, there's comedy up there? I didn't think about that.
They have open mics on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday.
That's like here. Oh. Or in Cleveland. That's like Cleveland.
Good to know. And now we have one every other Friday, in case you and your wife are looking to come at Mad Max in Lakewood, the mac and cheese place. Ooh. And if you perform, you get half off your bill.
What?
Yeah, Jess, you missed that. Aww. You missed that. Okay. You could have had that bacon.
I got this pillow.
Chicken ranch. I saw that pillow. It looks like sneak.
The pillow is something. Is a consolation. Do you have pets, Dan? Oh, that dog!
He showed the dog and
Abby,
the birds.
Look, man.
Come on.
What did I say?
Oh, she's under the bed. Abby, come here. She was under the bed. I didn't know.
Aww.
Come on.
There she is.
Baby.
Hi, baby. Hi, baby girl.
Come on.
Aww. Oh, kiss
she's
her.
Also been a really big help too.
I was gonna ask, like,
she's absolutely.
Oh, yeah. She's so cute.
She's one of the sweetest dogs.
How old is she?
She is 8, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's that record.
Did you get...
She's like, was she like a black lab mix, or...
She's black lab, German Shepherd, Pit, and Blue Heeler.
Wow. I've never even heard of the last one.
Yeah.
You never heard of a Blue Heeler?
No.
They're like a, they're a sheepdog.
Okay.
Like a Australian breed.
That's awesome.
She's a cat lady. She's a...
Yeah. She's if you would have said Selkirk Rex, I would have known what that was.
The fuck are you talking about?
That's
right?
A cat. You don't know what a Selkirk Rex is?
No!
What?
Because I'm a normal person.
Excuse Selkirk me for being educated. All that
was because I'm a normal person.
It's all you
wow,
needed to hear.
Wow, there's a lot of judgment going on here.
Oh my god, that's like, oh, but you've heard, have you heard of those Chinese crested dogs?
Yeah, those don't look cute.
They're horrifying. Yeah. They're like weird lizard chihuahuas.
Yeah, they're not great. They're like those sphinx cats. They're like hairless and except the crest.
Yeah, except they got weird like crest. Little like poofy hairs yeah. that kind of look like stray feathers, like a
feathers,
molted
yeah.
bird. They it's gross.
Or a dog. Hey, so it sounds like you've covered all the things that you want to promote as far as upcoming shows. Do you have a social media or anything you want to promote? Dan Birdie?
On Facebook at FUBAR Comedy, that's our page. That's really all I got right now. So.
But that's where everyone can find like all the shows and events and stuff you're hosting, right?
Right.
Cool.
Or Daniel Brady. Add me too. I post everything as well.
Right on.
Dan will front everyone.
Dan is awesome.
Because he's that friendly.
Dan's so sweet. He's always offering me gigs on his shows. And I'm like, yeah, I'll be home for 3 days. I'm so sorry. I'm not going to have time. And fuck me.
Yeah.
Elizabeth, do you have anything you want to promote as far as social media?
I don't know.
No.
Elizabeth Seaman probably on Instagram. And I never post, so.
Okay, cool. Promoting things that aren't worth promoting.
Basic. Oh, burn. Elizabeth, you burnt.
Well, no, you said
if
it.
If you're not going to Around the Corner on Mondays, you're an idiot.
Hey,
that's
a
great venue.
Look at that. That's
a
great endorsement. SX1 at SX1 Entertainment on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. To find out when all of our shows are going on. I want to thank at OK Pants for doing our logo. I want to thank Above Below Entertainment for being our network. And of course, I want to thank Dan Brady for being our guest today. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. It was fun.
Such a fun time. And Kayla Gray.